My name is Carrie and I am an alcoholic. Thank you for having me here. We are going to be talking about the third step today. For those of you who are just joining and you haven't been with us for the past 5 weeks, my name is Carrie. I am an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons Group. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2010. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and I sponsor women who sponsor women. And those are the things that make me somewhat qualified to share a little bit about how I have taken others through this book and how it has been shown to me. But that is by no means the only way to go through the only wrong way to go through this big book is not to do it. If your sponsor is saying something that doesn't line up with what I'm saying, your sponsor's right. Okay, it's way better. And I just want to make sure to say this at least once every three sessions. I don't know, that sounds like a good number. That, there's sponsorship lines that for everybody. There's a wrench for every nut, right? And there's sponsorship lines over here that are like, I don't know. You don't sleep with anybody in the first year. Keep your legs shut for 90 days. You sit in the front row, text check in with me every single day. You better call me at 7 and not 7:01. All that. And then there's sponsorship lines over here that are like, if it doesn't say it in the big book, it's none of my business. Like, we just do what the big book says, And then there's everything in between. And none of it's wrong. Because the people that this works for would never work for the, what this works for, and vice versa. The only thing that I have seen that I would discourage out of all of that is cherry picking what you like out of this and what you like out of this. And ooh, that sounds nice, but I don't like what they said. That is, so the only thing I can say is pick a side and ride. Throw yourself wholeheartedly into what your sponsor is suggesting, not what some lady on the internet says, and follow those suggestions. And if it doesn't work, then pick a different sponsorship line and try something new. The specific line that I'm in and the way I've been raised in AA, which is the only really thing that I can give away, I'm not going to make stuff up. I don't care for the game of telephone, is what I've been shown. And what I've been shown is the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been shown going through it word for word, line by line, page by page, and not adding anything for my comfort level, and not taking anything away from my comfort level, and not changing anything for my comfort level. I'm a literalist. And so I am grateful that these are such clear-cut instructions for me. So that's my deal. So we're going to be talking about pre-three today, okay? That's the third step and getting ready for the third step. So we're going to be going back and forth and playing in the field of page 59 through 63. Those are the pages we're going to be focused on today. And we're going to go back and forth. So, get your highlighters, get your pages ready, but that's pretty much where we're going to be contained today. So let's start with where we left off last week on page 59. Here are the steps we took. Well, for right there, I want to stop even right there. It doesn't say here are the steps we take. It doesn't say here are the steps we work. It says here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Okay. It does not say that it tells me that this is that. This program of recovery is what AA suggests. And this language in the big book and the clear-cut directions in the big book over and over again make clear to me that for me, this is a suggested program of recovery, a suggested program full of requirements, though. Not a requirement, not a required program full of suggestions, but a suggested program full of requirements. They use the R word a lot. So if that makes you uncomfortable, again, I'm not going to take that word out to fit anybody's comfort level. There's a lot of requirements in these directions. There's a lot of musts in these directions. There's only one kind of requirement for membership in AA. That's a desire to stop drinking. That's it. But that's the fellowship. And the fellowship and the program are two very, very different things. And you can be in the fellowship all you want. You don't even have to quit drinking. But in order to recover, there's a few more things that I have had to do in order to actually work a program. That's that you don't even have to have a big book to just be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't even have to attend a meeting to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's only one requirement for that, but there are many more requirements in my big book as far as working this program. So if that makes you uncomfortable, you know, I'm just saying it from the get, so you don't have to waste the next hour with me, but I won't be skipping over those words. So this suggested program, and I think I used the cookie analogy last week, so I'll just briefly go over it one more time for those who weren't here last week. You know, my grandma made the best chocolate chip cookies on earth, right? And when she died, she has a chocolate chip recipe that is suggested that I use if I want to impress, you know, the people that I'm having over and have the best chocolate chip cookies in the world, right? But the ingredients, the clear-cut instructions, they're not suggestions. The recipe is a suggestion. The recipe is the one that she would suggest and the one that I would suggest because that's the one that works for me. Now, I can't take that recipe and say, well, I'm on a diet, so I don't think I'm going to use butter. I think I'm going to use applesauce instead. And I can't start, you know, messing with that recipe or else it's not my grandma's recipe anymore. I can use a different recipe, the one on the back of the Toll House chocolate chip cookies. That looks good, but this is just a suggested recipe. You don't have to use it. But if you're going to use the recipe, you got to use the recipe and the ingredients. And that's what these next 12, you know, steps are making clear. So I'm going to just, if you, those of you who are wanting to highlight, and you don't have to, I'm going to read one word from every step. So we're going to skip all the other words because we all hear them in meetings. These are the 12 steps. I'm going to have you highlight one word out of every step. Ready for this? So in step one, the word admitted. Step two, came. Step three, made. Step four, made. Step five, admitted. Step six, were. Step seven, asked. Step eight, made. Step nine, made. Step 10, continued. Step 11, improve. Step 12, practice. One thing that the first nine steps have in common, those words, are they're all past tense. One thing that the maintenance and growth steps have in common, steps 10, 11, and 12, is they imply that I'm never done with those. I continue, improve, and practice, right? And I'm going to be continuing, improving, and practicing for the rest of my life, for the rest of my life. Those are continuation steps. So on page 60, where it says, after we read step 12, I'm starting on page 60, it says, many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. Thank God, right? We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. That sounds a lot like step one to me. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That sounds a lot like step two to me. and C, that God could and would if he were sought. So, being convinced we are at step three. Now, I want you to flip to 63 real quick. In the middle of 63, there's a paragraph that starts out, we are now at step three. Why? Why does it say it twice? Like, it used to frustrate the heck out of me. Well, what do you mean we're now at step three? We were at step three 2.5 pages before. It says being convinced we're at step three. Well, this is the only step that does that. And everything between we are at step three, being convinced we are at step three, and on the middle of page 63, where it says we are now at step three, I consider and I call that pre-three. Why? Why do we have a pre-three? Well, because look right below the third step prayer on page 63. It says we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. So how do I make sure I'm ready? Pre-three. So let's see. Let's go back to page 60 where it says being convinced we were at step three. That doesn't mean that we were actually on step three. That means we are convinced that we are at step three, but which is that we've decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand him. But just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? Well, that's what pre-three is here for. It's to let us know what exactly that means and to get us ready to make what could be the most important decision I will ever make in my life. That's not something that I take lightly, this third step. So the first requirement, they use the R word. I'm not going to go light on that, okay? The first requirement, not suggestion, is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or someone, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, not alcoholics, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. So what usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think that life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, whatever the case may be. Still, the play doesn't suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he's sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion? And I was on a meeting the other day where they were kind of arguing back and forth between the words delusion and illusion. I'm not that much of a literalist, but the basic gist of it, and if you know, Google the difference between illusion and delusion, is an illusion is something that you're seeing with your eyes that you know maybe isn't true. Like when a magician is doing a magic trick, you know it's an illusion, right? A delusion is belief, core belief. You believe that that man on stage is really floating. And an illusion is, well, you're seeing him float, but you know that's probably not, you know? So that's the difference between illusion and delusion. And this is a delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well. Oh, how many of us do that? Still, you know? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are things that he wants? These are the things he wants. And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I know I can be. Our actor is self-centered. Egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He is like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine. We're in Florida. It's making fun of your guys' state. No, who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining about the state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 21st century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him. And the alcoholic who has lost it all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, our self-pity? So this next couple of paragraphs, whenever we hear the word self, I'm going to ask you to highlight that or put a box around it or circle it or underline it or whatever. My sponsor had me put a box around it, around the word self, because this is what's going to get me ready to take the third step. So selfishness, these are all the different kinds of self that have been running my life and driving me. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we've made decisions based on what? Self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems to be no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and psychological convictions galore, physiological convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help. This is the how and the why of it. Remember in the beginning of this reading, where it says being convinced we're at step three, which is to turn our will and our life over to God. What do we mean by that? And just what do we do? And then it told us, it just told us what the problem is, right? In these last couple of pages, self, 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 self. And now it's saying this is the how and the why of it. First of all, now it's going to give us the solution. We had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Why didn't it work? Well, the last two pages. That's why. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be the director. He is our God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. My dyslexia is kicking in really bad today, and I apologize for switching up words. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone. Remember how I told you guys that I was going to point out the keystone in step three? So we have in step one, we have the foundation upon complete willingness, right? And then in step two, we went through two different pages that it talks about the cornerstone in step two. And now we're finally at the keystone, which is step three of the new and triumphant arch through which we passed to freedom. Now we're going to read the third step promises. So that's the how and the why of it. What we just went over, that is how we're preparing to do step three, to take this step. And now they want to give us a little carrot dangling before the horse. So we actually go through with it, right? So here's the third step promises. When we sincerely, and I have the word sincerely highlighted, because it doesn't mean, oh, when I wake up every morning and I do steps one, two, and three after I go pee and before I drink my coffee. No, 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 no. This is a much bigger deal than that. Like, this is a big decision for me. So when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. Because remember, just two pages previous, it was talking about how our little plans and designs, we're the actor. We want to run the whole show. We want to, you know, direct the ballet, all the actors, all the everything. We want to be in charge. And this is saying, when we sincerely took such a position, and I like to think of it as a position on my knees, a position physically of surrender. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, this is the first step of many that talk about, no, we're not powerless for the rest of our lives. New power is flowing in. We're acquiring this new power. As we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Those are some pretty powerful promises. So what does sincerely taking a position mean? What does earnestly mean? Those words to me mean I'm not going to say my third step and consider that me muttering a few words half asleep every morning when I wake up, sincerely taking such a position. This is controversial. If your sponsor says to do it every morning, wonderful. I'm just going to give you my experience. I sincerely took this position one time. One time. On my knees in my living room with my sponsor. And I have not changed my mind since. I have taken one third step. And I have not gotten divorced. These are like wedding vows for me. I have not changed my mind. I have not decided that I can think I can run the show better than God. Have I taken my will back? Ooh, every day, all day. Every day, all day. That's why I have the 11th step to remind me over and over again the decision that I made that day. To remind me over and over again, saying many times each day, thy will not mine be done, right? Because all of that is the 11th step. I get to practice these principles in my steps 10, 11, and 12. But this I only did once. And now do I screw up? Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And do I screw up as a wife? Do I disrespect my husband sometimes? Absolutely. But we don't get remarried the next day. I don't have to have another wedding. I just remind myself of those vows I took and I get back on track, right? So how do we sincerely take such a position? I know for me, my sponsor told me that I was to take this third step because now it says, well, now we're at step three. Uh-oh, now we're actually here because we've been over pre-three. And I'm just going to, just so you guys know, because I told you in the beginning of this thing, I was going to show you what I do when I'm taking an alcoholic through these steps. What I do is we stop there. We stop there. And we don't take the third step. I let my sponsee, pigeon, prospect, whatever you want to call it, take this book home and give thoughtful contemplation every morning and every evening for a few days until the next time we meet up to actually take this third step, to read through this pre-three, everything written between being convinced we are at step three and we are now at step three, and give thoughtful contemplation, which is the definition for meditation, to these words and to that self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. And that's how, you know, the directions say we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. That's how I prepare the woman that I'm taking through this work, that they are for sure going to be ready, that they are giving lots of thoughtful contemplation to the decision they're about to make, because this was the biggest decision I've ever made for myself, is turning my will and my life over to the care of God. And so how do I do that and become earnest and do this sincerely? Well, when my sponsor told me to take this first step or this third step, right there in the middle of page 63 and rewrite it, oh my God, I was like, blasphemy. We don't change the wording in the big book, right? Like, how dare you say that? But then it also gives us permission, you know, later on down the page, it says the wording was, of course, quite optional. So long as we've expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. Wow. So it's giving me permission to change the wording, not the idea, right? And so how sincere am I going to be when I'm new in AA? Today, I can say this third step prayer without laughing, without changing the words. I can say it honestly and earnestly, without changing a single thing about it. However, when I was new and I had never been to, you know, church or any of that stuff, I don't know, thou wilt, like thy, what the hell does that mean? Like, that's not how I talk. How am I going to be earnest and sincere using these words that make me want to laugh, right? And so my sponsor said that I get to change the wording, not the meaning, into how I talk to God. Like, I don't know, do I call God homie? Like, do I call, whatever, you know, do I call him Jesus? Do I call him whatever, you know, like whatever I call him, great, put that in there. Do I call him God? You know, I didn't at the time. I actually, when I took my third step, believe it or not, you guys, I believed in God. But I had never heard the voice of God, and I didn't have a connection with God when I was on my third step. And so for me, I had to turn my will and my life over to the care of Alcoholics Anonymous to build with me and to do with me what it will, relieving me through the work of the bondage of self-centeredness so that I may do AA's will better. You know, that's kind of how my third step looked in the beginning. I want to allow my difficulties to be taken away so that victory over them may bear witness to AA's power, love, and way of life. May I do these spiritual principles always. And that's kind of how it sounded for me in the beginning. And that was okay, because I really did earnestly turn my will and my life over to Alcoholics Anonymous. And through AA, you know, this process introduced me to God. And you know, and I think God is what gave me Alcoholics Anonymous, because he knew I wasn't going to hear the voice of God, and I needed a translator, right? And so that's just my path. That's not the path I even share with all of my newcomers, but we all have our own path. And I hope that this book meets everyone where they are. You know, it has met me where I was, and I've seen through the process of taking other people through this work that it can meet you where you are, which is what I love about this. So, you know, my instructions when I'm working with someone, and there's probably a handful of you in the room, is that I hate calling it homework, spiritual work to do, I guess. For the next few days until we meet up again to do your third step, to take that step together. You rewrite your third step using your own language. If you've been in AA for 100 years and you're perfectly okay writing thy and thou, and that sounds normal to you, great. Don't change it. I had to change it because it wasn't earnest for me to use the word thou wilt. That wasn't something that is the way I talk to my higher power. You know, rewrite the third step and then go through and give thoughtful contemplation every day and every night to all of these places where self-will has defeated us, right? Where self-will has gotten in the way, where obviously running my own life has just failed me. And that is how, well, so let's say the third step now. So what we do is I usually get down on my knees with my prospect, with my sponsee, and they have handed me their prayer that they wrote in their own words. So I have their prayer, no, they don't. Or we open this book and I just read word for word out of the book, depending on what they want to do. It's not my program, you know, it's your program. It's not, you know, what works for you is what's best. And so I take that prayer and you're on your knees and your eyes are closed and your hands are in my hand and my other hand is got your prayer. And you repeat after me like wedding vows, God, I offer myself to thee. And then you repeat. And then I say, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. And I wait for you to say it in your own time, earnestly. And we go through the whole prayer like that. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I will help. I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Sometimes we say amen. Sometimes we don't. It depends on the person. It's not up to me. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. That is exactly why we have pre-3, to make sure we're ready, that we can at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. We found it desirable to take this step with a spiritual step, with an understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, spiritual advisor. But it's better to meet God alone than with someone who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we expressed the idea of voicing it without reservation. This was only in the beginning, though. If honestly and humbly made, an effect, sometimes a great one, was felt at once. Highlight the word next and launched. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect, unless at once, highlight the word at once, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of these things in ourselves, which had been blocking us. What are those things? All that self, 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 all those different ways self has manifested itself. Our liquor was but a symptom. So we had to get down to causes and conditions. So we're done with the third step. We get off our knees. When do we get to the fourth step? Well, when do we launch onto the fourth step? I have never seen anything launch slowly before. But the clear cut directions in this book is the word next. That's a timeline. And then at once. So anytime between next and at once is a good time to start your fourth step. It doesn't say after you've given it a week to make sure that you're really in alignment with God's will, trying out your new third step, making sure that it's fitting right on you. No, no, no. Next, we launched, like right now. So get your paper out, you know, let's get into this fourth step. So therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step 4. Notice how this was step 4 is in italics. There's only one place that starts the fourth step. The third step is a little bit silly because it does it twice, but that's only because pre-3 is so crucial and important to be entirely ready before we take that vital and crucial step. So a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke, right? That's easy to follow through with. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. Notice how it does not say feeling-finding and emotion-having process. I think that a lot of us and a lot of, I've seen a lot of people share in meetings like that they've written their life stories and that they've written a book for a fourth step, or like people who are sitting on their fourth step for 4 months and actually putting the work into it. And it's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No wonder so many people go out and get drunk on their fourth step. Like, could you imagine all of the, I don't know. I didn't do it that way, so I can't imagine. I stuck to what my sponsor said, which she's pointed this out time and time again to me. She's like, no, 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 no. This is a fact-finding and fact-facing process, right? Don't, it's not feeling finding, it's not emotion having process. That's why we have the fifth step, because you don't want to go to those places of morbid reflection when you're alone. Like a fifth step is where you can actually open up and get all that out, the feelings and the emotions and all that stuff, because you're with another alcoholic. That's why the fifth step says, you know, we prepared for a long talk, because that's when we can be safe. To go through that, the process and those emotions and those feelings. But the fourth step, I mean, it's nothing but a fact-finding and fact-facing process and an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. This is how I have to think about it. I have to keep it really simple. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of a business is going to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. So what does that mean? Well, that means this is the time where I will usually take you over to my medicine cabinet, or if we're at your house, we go over to your medicine cabinet or your pantry or wherever, let's say pantry this time. And we look for expired goods, right? Like this is how matter of fact this step should be. I open my pantry. We take out a box of expired cake mix. It's like, it's expired 2 years ago. Probably might still be good because all the preservatives, but I'm going to set it aside anyway, right? We got a dented can of something that we don't even know what it is anymore because it's lost its wrapper. Okay, this is going to be discarded. That is in the no need it category anymore, right? No need that. Then we have another can. It's all dented up, but the label is still on. We can see it's pinto beans, but we don't know why we have pinto bean, but instead of like looking at that can going, oh my God, this is way expired and it's all dented up and it's pinto beans. I don't even like pinto beans. What am I doing with pinto beans? Oh my God. No, 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 no. It's not a feeling having and emotion processing process. We just take the pinto beans and we put them in the unsaleable goods pile and then move on to the next item. That's it. Fact finding, fact facing, not emotion having and feeling facing, not now. That's the fifth step. So we just simply put them aside, all of the things that don't suit me anymore. We did exactly this same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup, which caused our failure, being convinced that self manifested in various ways. What is what defeated us, we considered it its common manifestations. So what that's saying, and I know I stuttered a lot. So being convinced that self, and the reason why we're convinced is because we gave all that thoughtful contemplation to those, all those highlights of all of the different ways that self manifested, right? And so we are now convinced because we did that homework. We did that work. We did that self-searching. And that leveling of the pride already in pre-3, right? So so now the first part of the fourth step is, and for me, I have four parts. I have resentment, fear, sex, and harms done. The first is always resentment. Why? Because resentment is the number one offender. That's why. So this is where I get to make my hit list, right? All the assholes in my life that have ever crossed my path. I get to make a list of them. It destroyed more alcoholics than anything else. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease. Resentment. From resentment stems all forms of spiritual disease, not alcoholism. Alcoholism doesn't make spiritual disease. resentment does. You don't have to be an alcoholic to have a spiritual malady. But chances are you have a lot of resentments if you have a spiritual malady. Nowhere in this book, and you know, I love PPG. Oh my God, I love PPG. So if there's anyone from the PPG in here today, and I also love the workbook. This book does not say anywhere that it's a threefold disease. So I'm going to go along with what the book says, that it's an illness of two, of a coupled physical and mental with a spiritual solution. Again, we're getting into the spiritual solution now. We're in the spiritual solution. The spiritual solution has nothing to do with the fact that I'm allergic to alcohol. The spiritual solution has nothing to do with the fact that I'm obsessed with alcohol and I can't not drink. The spiritual solution is what many people, not just the alcoholic, need to not just quit drinking, but quit, I don't know, having sex, doing drugs, gambling, whatever. The spiritual solution applies to more than just an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I qualify for Alcoholics Anonymous because I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I'm not spiritually different from my fellows. Anyone on this face of the earth can suffer the spiritual malady. What causes the spirituality? Not alcoholism, resentment. Resentment causes the spiritual malady. Resentment is what all forms of spiritual disease stems from, is resentment. We have not only been mentally and physically ill, we have also been spiritually sick because of resentment. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. So when the solution of the spiritual 12 steps of getting out of self and helping someone else, this selfless program, not a selfish program, is starting to be implemented, then all of a sudden my alcoholism starts going away. I straighten out mentally and physically, and that's my alcoholism. I suffer from a mental and spiritual, that coupled is my alcoholism. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, and this is the instructions, okay? So this is the first column. We listed people, institutions, or principles with we are angry. We asked ourselves why, second column, right? So what they did, so now we have who are the assholes and why they're assholes. So that's easy because I've been doing that part of the inventory my whole life. Like way before I came to AA, I had those first columns pretty much down. You know, I had been practicing that part of my fourth step for a while. Like that person is wrong, and here's why. Now we asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened. Yikes. Okay. So maybe fear has something to do with my resentments. I don't know. Let's see. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name of our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which have been interfered with? Makes a lot of sense. We were usually as definite as this example. And I love the example they use in the big book. I love this example because it is so clear cut. It's the columns. I'm resentful at blank, right? So in this example, I like to go from left to right so that we kind of see how it works. But once you start writing your fourth step, or once you have your prospect on their fourth step, it's very helpful to give the directions to just make the list. Don't look at the second column, just make the first column. And then once we're completely done with that first column and we've made our grudge list, then we can start on the second column and go down and go, why? Why are we angry? And then we can go on to the third column. And the reason that I find that that's helpful, and the reason that the big book implies that that's the way it should be done also, is because if we go across, we're going to start seeing our own pattern. And subconsciously, we're going to start eliminating people from our grudge list because we don't want to have to take our own inventory, right? So let's put those other two columns out of our mind entirely, right? The third and fourth column. And let's just focus on the first and second column so that we can do it completely, like fearless and thoroughly, or else I'm probably going to conveniently forget to put a couple on there. So I was resentful at, this guy says, Mr. Brown. Well, why? Because his attention to my wife, which affects his sex relations, obviously. And he told my wife of my mistress, that jerk, and that affects my self-esteem and it puts me in fear. Cause what if now my wife is going to leave me, me, and this is all how self has just manifested and has been controlling my life. Says Mr. Brown may get my job at the office. Well, of course that's going to affect my security, my self-esteem, fear. Mrs. Jones. Well, she's a nut. She snubbed me. So, she committed her husband for drinking and he's my friend and she's a gossip. So that affects my personal relationship, self-esteem, fear. My employer, unreasonable, unjust, overbearing, threatens to fire me for drinking and padding my expense account. Like everybody doesn't do that. The jerk. Self-esteem, fear, obviously threatens his security because he might get fired. My wife misunderstands and nags. Oh, she likes Mr. Brown. Wants house put in her name. Well, that's definitely going to affect my pride, my personal relations, and my security if the house is going in her name. Fear. So we went back through our lives, from today backward. I used to think that it was like in rehab when they give you a timeline and you're supposed to start at your earliest memories. And no. Let's go back through our lives. What's eaten your lunch today, right? Like, this is not a life story. What's eating my lunch today? What is causing my spiritual malady today? What resentments do I have that I need to take care of today? And then start going back through my life until I start seeing the patterns. This does not need to be a 40 or 50 line item list. All we're looking for is a pattern. That's it. We're not looking for the specifics. We're looking for the exact nature of our wrongs, right? The patterns. So we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent is that the world and all of its people were often quite wrong. I'm glad that it lets me consider that. To conclude that others were wrong is as far as most of us ever got. That for sure for me, because like I said, I've been doing those first two columns for my whole life. And that's as far as I ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse. And then sometimes we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth, and I have those two words highlighted. And you know, and I love When a lot of people call steps 10, 11, and 12 maintenance steps. And then there's a whole group of people that'll say, they're not the maintenance steps, those are the growth steps. And then you'll have a whole bunch of people who call them, you know, the growth steps, who say, that's not true. It says maintenance step in the first, you know, paragraph right after this 10th step promises, it says maintenance. And you get all these people going back and forth. They're maintenance and growth steps. I don't know how we argue some of these things. Like in order for my grass to grow, I have to maintain it, right? Like, and that's kind of how that's kind of an analogy that I'll offer also with these steps. It's like, I don't have to do steps 1, 2, and 3 every day. When I, oh my God, thank God I don't have to do all 12 steps every single day. I got to, I live these spiritual principles that I learned through taking those steps every day, through taking steps 10, 11, and 12 and practicing those principles in all of my affairs. But I don't have to take on all that, you know, 1 through 9 every day. Oh my God. My, couple years ago, one of my girls, Melissa, I think it was her like second year birthday. We were going to have a birthday party for her over here. And my husband, he was going to put in a lawn because when he moved out after the divorce, I don't do yard work, and the lawn, it died and it needed to recover again, right? It was not in fit spiritual condition, I'll tell you that much. And so after he moves back in and we get remarried, we're in AA, he's putting in a lawn. And it's not just like that he's gonna water that dead, all that dead dirt outside and the lawn's going to come back. No, it's dead. It's dead and gone. Like, you know, it went and got drunk. Right. So we need to start from scratch. So he gets a big rototiller from, this rental company, and he gets all this dirt and manure brought in, and he rototills up the whole yard. And then he says, it's my job to rake the dirt. And I hurt my arm really bad. I don't do much physical labor. I'm like, had to spend almost a year in physical therapy over that one. Anyway, so we're raking the dirt and we have to pick out all the rocks and get rid of them. This is like building a foundation, right? Upon complete willingness. This is like the first step of the yard work, right? And then some people can plant seeds and then you have to stay off of the grass for like 3 weeks, and you have to water it and make sure that that grass is going to start growing. And if you see a weed, you got to get that weed out there real quick and the rocks out of there. And you know, you baby this grass. But we actually just bought sod because it was quicker, I think, if I remember right. But anyway, so we put the sod in, cheated, but you know, this grass grows, and we finally, after doing all this work, right, steps 1 through 9, now we can walk on it. We don't have to be scared. We're not walking on eggshells. We're not going to turn up drunk if we go and walk on the grass like we would have while it was still recovering. Like, you know, you got to watch out for those slippery places, people, places, and things and all that stuff when you have no mental defense against that first drink. But now that we have a grass, a yard, my dog can pee on it. We do whatever. And it doesn't matter. We're not afraid it's going to die so long as we take care of the maintenance, right? We water it, we have to weed it, we feed it, we mow it. And the more we maintain it, the more it continues to grow. And that is what these steps are for. I don't have to wake up every morning and go tear up my front yard and rototill that shit. Like, no way, Jose, you know, like that would be quite the process. So that's why I don't understand people who think that, you know, they do the steps every day. It's like, man, the fifth step alone, like who's got time for that? A sponsor being prepared to listen to your whole life story every day? Oh, no way. So I'm really grateful that those are in past tense and the maintenance and growth steps are the continuation steps. So it says, the maintenance and growth. I love the combination of that, of a spiritual experience. So, but with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience. I love that. This business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns. Not the insanity of people, places, and things, guys. Like the insanity of alcohol. The alcoholic insanity. That's what this is talking about. That's what this whole book is talking about. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. But we're not the only people who have these character defects. These are not alcoholic defects. These are human characteristics, right? All humans have them. However, they may be the dubious luxury of normal men. But for the alcoholic, these things are poison. So my character defects are not what separates me from other human beings walking, sharing this earth with me. That's, you know, my alcoholism is not because my character defects are not because of my alcoholism. My alcoholism makes it to where I cannot practice those character defects. I have to live and grow along spiritual lines. Whereas somebody else, they might have the dubious luxury of being an asshole and not having repercussions. You know, they can lie and cheat and steal and they don't end up drunk. That's the difference. I don't get to blame my character defects on my invisible ism. Like nowhere in our literature talks about an ism. My service sponsor talks about how he's got 100 people employed by him. 10% of our society are alcoholic. So 10% of them are probably alcoholic, but he can guarantee 100% of them have some sort of ism, you know? And I think that when we talk about that ism, we're not talking about the alcohol. We're talking about that spiritual malady. And that has nothing to do with my alcoholism other than the fact that if I start living in that spiritual malady, if I don't start cleaning that stuff up, I'm not going to stay a recovered alcoholic. I will not recover to begin with. The insanity of alcohol will come back and I will drink. So we turn back to the list, for it held the key to our future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. So one of the tools that I use with people on their fourth step who have a hard time seeing they're wrong, and I don't use the word part, I just don't, because, and I'll explain why when we get to the ninth step, but I don't, when you're having a hard time finding your wrongs in something, and you're like, you know, wait a minute, I have this resentment because they did A, B, and C, and I've never done anything to them. Why do I have to look at what I've done? I've not done anything to them, right? Well, what I try to envision, because I'm a literalist, and I like to have pictures, is, okay, let's say the person I'm working with has a resentment toward a woman named Mandy May. Mandy May is a straight up B. I never did anything to her and she did A, B, and C to me. I say, okay, let's pretend that Mandy May is an alcoholic or even a non-alcoholic and in a different 12-step program, but let's pretend that Mandy May is sitting here across this table with her sponsor on her fourth step. And whose name should be in the first column but yours? Let's pretend your name is in Mandy May's first column. What would her second column say? Fancied or real? Right? Because we're prepared to look at things from an entirely different angle. We got to switch it up, turn the table around. And it's like, well, I mean, I guess I did gossip about her, but that's because she actually, it's like, okay. So not because, so you said what? Well, when she, okay, let's just stick to your the wrong that you did, right? And so we were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoings of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. Because resentment is the number one offender. How could we escape? We saw that the resentments must be mastered. But how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. It's not only alcoholics that are spiritually sick, you guys. Not only alcoholics that can have a spiritual malady. We're not unique in that. We're unique in the fact that it'll cause us to drink. And once we start drinking, we have an allergy that enables us, that prevents us from stopping drinking. And that's why it's deadly for us. We asked God, this is a prayer. Every time it says we asked God, right? It's a prayer. My first sponsor called this the sick F prayer. And the word F did not stand for friend. My sponsor I have now calls it the sick friend prayer. And she says that I should not call it the sick F prayer. So I'll go with the sick friend prayer. So we asked God, that's a prayer, to help us. Let's circle the word us, because nowhere in this paragraph is it telling us to pray for someone else. Nowhere. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended us, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry, not save them. Thy will be done. So this is a prayer asking God to give me the ability to treat this person like a sick friend. Or in my case, sometimes I have to pretend it's my daughter, right? I have to pray, God, please help me to think of them as if, what if my daughter were doing these things that they're doing? Grant me enough tolerance, love, and patience that I would cheerfully grant somebody who I love, right? Or a sick friend. And then I have to continue to pray. This is a sick person. How? And I have to ask God, how can I be helpful to them? Not, God, please give them everything that I want for myself. That does not say that anywhere in here. It's telling me to pray to God to save me from being angry. Thy will, not mine, be done. Thy will be done. God, save me from being angry. I don't do step work for other people. I do step work so that God can change me from the inside out. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people this way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done. So it's not our part. And I'm just going to, I guess I'll do this right now. I'm just going to do this right now. Okay, guys. So this is a 12 tradition illustrated. It's the only thing I have right by me that, oh no, I can do it with this. I don't have to rip up my 12 traditions illustrated. Here we go. This is a piece of paper. Okay. It's a 100% complete piece of paper. And if I'm going to be talking about my part, then that's insinuating that this is here too. What if this is the only part that I had in it? And 95% of the situation was the other person's part, right? So as long as I'm still talking about my part, that's still assuming that someone else played a part too. Now, if I take away putting out of mind the other person's stuff entirely, then I'm just looking at my wrong. 100% of my wrong is my wrong. I have, it's not my part. I have 100% of my wrong is mine. I'm not looking at the other person. If I have this here, then I'm sort of trying to kind of look at their part too. My wrong, my harm's done. That's why I don't use the word part. Well, and this book doesn't use the word part, but so we avoid the, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, right? This, I don't get a look at that anymore. I don't get a look at that. We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. This is 100% of my own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. That's another highlight. It keeps telling us this. Disregard. This, we're not looking at. We've thrown this out. There's no part. The inventory was ours, not the other man's. We saw our faults and we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs, honestly, and we were willing to set these matters straight. And we'll get on with fears next week. Back to you, Amber.
Thanks, Carrie, so much for that. And I'm really grateful that you did this tonight because I have my girls on here that are both on their four steps. Yes. So with that, I will go ahead and open up. Please send your questions to me in the chat. I only have a few right now. And I know somebody's going to ask some questions on their resentments list. All right. So the first question I have says, in the third column, self-esteem is always followed by fear. Is that always the case if self-esteem is written?
I wouldn't know. It is followed by fear this in the case we just read, but I don't know if that's the case through all of our literature. I'm not sure about that one. That's my favorite answer is I don't know.
Me too. Me too. All right. Next question I have is, where did you go? Read that one. I know I had another one. Do you suggest a number limit on the amount of resentments to list?
Not for your sponsees, but for mine, yes, I do. I do. I just, you know, I mean, until it starts getting, you know, I went to this Charlie and Katie P. Big Book Maniacs workshop early in my sobriety. And, you know, Charlie said, and this is really wrong true, because at the time I was having the people I was working with were still writing books, right? And it was not safe. And everybody was going out on their fourth step. I didn't know why. So I love Big Book workshops. And Charlie said, he opened up the three-ring binder and he said, put a one, then skip a line, put a two, then skip a line, put a three, then skip a line. Just go down 1 through 10, no more than 10 and no more than one line per line. That way you're not putting a life story. You're not, you don't have time to say, well, you know, I, let's say, okay. This woman was flirting with my husband. And so of course I was going to flirt with her husband back. And that's, and he actually made the first move on me. And it's like, wait a minute. No. You don't have room for all that. What is it? The actual thing. And you finally get down to it and it's like, oh, I slept with a married man. And it's like, don't fill in all of that other stuff. You know, that's just excuses. Just put down the exact event. I slept with someone's husband, not because she did this, not because he did this, not because he made the first move. I slept with someone's husband. And that's all that fits in a line, skip a line, number two, skip a line, number three, skip a line. And by the time you get to 10, you're going to start seeing a pattern because my character defects, the same defects play their same role in pretty much every situation in my life.
Perfect. Thank you. I'm sorry. I have a bunch of stuff coming in now. All right. What do you call it if you don't call it my part of the resentment?
I call it what the Big Book calls it. My wrongs, my wrongdoings, My harms, my, the big book uses five different, I have them all highlighted, but we'll get into that too in our ninth step, in the ninth step. But yeah, the big book just doesn't use the word part because it implies that someone else has a part. If I'm only taking ownership in part, then that implies that someone else has a part too. And if I'm looking at my wrongs, I'm looking at 100% of my wrongs.
Perfect. Thank you. Is it possible to visually give an example of a fourth step with all columns? And I can put out there that I can send out what I send to my girls. But if you don't have one, Carrie.
Oh, no, I have those. And I don't prefer use them. But I do have them. And a lot of women need those. I mean, a lot of us need them. People like me who, I am dyslexic. I do have, you know, a lot of outside issues. I can get words jumbled up, and I do need, you know, kind of a worksheet. The worksheet that I give out when it's needed, which is not every time I take somebody through the steps, is literally word for word out of the big book. It only uses the exact words in the big book, and it even gives the page numbers. And so there's not anything that you wouldn't find in the big book on the worksheets that I have. I just don't prefer them.
Yeah. Okay, great. There we go. If you're understanding, in your understanding, what is the difference between selfishness and self-centeredness?
Oh, I don't know. Self-centeredness is the what's inside of me, and selfishness can be an action, I guess. So I wake up self-centered, right, to the extreme. That doesn't mean I have to behave selfishly. Mm-hmm. Even though I want to, because I'm self-centered, it doesn't mean that I have to act, you know, I can act as if I'm not self-centered, by not being selfish.
Thank you. All right. In the effects, my column where it lists pride, is this on top of self-esteem, ambition, pocketbooks, personal relations, and sex relations? Or what does it mean?
Oh, I don't care what order they're in. I mean, the big, yeah. I'm not going to be that picky. I'm a literalist, but I guess if it comes first, put pride first.
Right. All righty. Is not fear at the root of all of our defects?
I can argue both sides of that. Yeah. I would say yes for a short answer. I could go into a kind of a 20-minute monologue if you want to hear a deeper answer, but I think, for the most part, my defects are fear-based. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Thanks, Carrie. All right. So there are five or six things to possibly put down. That's the same with the effects. So are there five or six things to possibly put down for the effects?
Oh, five. I've seen lists that even go further in than that. I mean, I've seen lists that have like, Not that I do it. I like basically just the basic five, but I've seen lists of like 12 different things because there's so many different types of ambitions. Like it can affect my career ambitions, my, like grab a shovel and keep digging. Like I'm sure you can come up with a whole bunch more than just the five and six, but I stick with the basic five.
It says, how many columns does your fourth step have?
It has four. Four.
I was going to say four.
Yeah.
All right. That's those are all the questions I have for right now. If anybody wants to send me in another question, we'll give it a minute or two. But thank you, Carrie.
I don't think it's wrong, though, to have I don't think it's wrong to have three columns or five columns. You know, I know that a lot of people do five columns because it really gives you a head start in the ninth step and in your sixth step. And I don't think any of that is bad or wrong. And I just want to continue saying that my personal one has four, but I don't think that the three column or the five column are any, you know, less right.
Anybody got anything else for me? All right, well, I'm not getting any more questions. Somebody asked, what's in your fourth column? I see three columns in the book. What is the fourth column?
So it's a good head start on my sixth step. The fourth column for me is I don't like to, this is a big book study, and I don't really like to go too much outside of what the big book suggests in a big book study. I'm not comfortable with that because the game of telephone is it's alive and well in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can assure you of that. And I like to stick with word for word what the big book says in a big book study, because even though I might have some really great ideas and I might whisper them to the person who I'm sponsoring, and they might pass it on to the person they're sponsoring, and they might pass it on to the person they're sponsoring, I have, I believe, a spiritual obligation to let that person know that when I'm sponsoring them, that this is what the book says. This is what's been shown to me that I have found useful in addition to what the book says. But when I am put behind a podium or like I am right now, I feel it's just as much of a spiritual obligation to stick to just what the book says, because I don't want to start any, this sounds good in a meeting, so I'm going to repeat it in another meeting, because that's how we get way off track with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to answer that question, but I'm going to stop at just what the big book says.
Awesome. Thanks, Carrie. Okay. Okay. It says the big book talks about Bill doing it in a day. And then somebody who, the same person asked, what about time limits for a fourth step?
I do have a time limit for a fourth step, and I don't mind mentioning that. My time limit has only come as a result of experience watching the same thing happen over and over and over and over again, and watching women drink on their fourth step. We get up off our knees from the third step, and the book gives a time limit. It says next at once, and it says launched. I don't know if any of you have seen a rocket ship launch, but it never happens slowly. And, you know, the book talks over and over again. I think in the appendix to Spiritual Experience, it says what these steps achieve in a few short months can hardly be touched on by years of self-discipline. I'm paraphrasing. For me, it is a race. And I know that some people say it's not a race and I wish you a, you know, slow recovery. I don't. I wish you fight to the freaking finish line, and I wish you a speedy recovery, because it's life and death. And so when we get up off of our knees from doing the third step prayer, we open up our book and we look two weeks down the line, and we schedule a time to have that long talk. And I schedule 6 hours for a fifth step to be done. And that's your timeline, because, it takes a lot. I'm a busy woman. Most of the women I work with are busy. And if we set that time aside 2 weeks in advance and we set that aside, then we're going to follow through with meeting on that day, or else we're going to have to wait another couple of weeks. And I don't like to sit on the fourth step.
Thank you, Carrie. Somebody did just send in, it says, Isn't the fourth column referring to our list? And this is quoted from the book. Referring to our list, we look for our wrongs, place them in black and white on page.
So yes, so that's the six-step list. That's a good, that's absolutely, yes. But the book doesn't have that fourth step on the columns that in the example. So yeah. I try to, but yes, absolutely. And I'm glad that somebody else said that so that it doesn't have to come from me, but absolutely. Yes.
Okay. All right. Perfect.
Okay. That's why it's a head start on my sixth step, right?
Yeah. Last question I have, and I don't have time for any more either because we've got to go ahead and close up on schedule. But the last question I have, so are the three columns that I see in the book the suggested requirement?
They are, I think the book uses the term example. So they're an example. And just like the third step prayer is an example of, you know, the wording, of course, was quite optional.